Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Helping you discover the Twin Cities, it is Radio K's Real College Podcast, online and on the air. My name is Matthew Curtis, and this week we are going to a concert. Minneapolis and St. Paul are home to dozens of unique, vibrant, and busy concert venues, ranging from the substantial and adaptable Target Center to the eccentric and extraordinary Cedar Cultural Center. Of course, this being Radio K, we are quite the fans of attending shows, but do we always take the right precautions for safety? We hear two stories contrasting our collective love of concerts and the medical danger of jamming without proper precaution. Also, we hear The Word on the Street with Olivia Iverson and Radio K's weekly release Spotlight. And all starts right now on the Real College Podcast. Our trusted producer David Lean is in the business of audio production, although he hasn't got it naturally easy. In fact, in his younger years, David was once a member of what he calls a very loud band, and after practice one day was diagnosed with tinnitus, or tinnitus. Although this ailment hasn't put him off playing music or going to concerts, he explains what it is and what fellow musicians and concertgoers can do to avoid it.
Here's a situation many people are probably familiar with. You go to a concert, and once it starts, pretty soon everyone, including you, is yelling out of excitement, just to be heard, or both. After it's over, you may find yourself still talking loudly.
Or maybe things sound muffled.
Or there's a ringing in your ears. What you're experiencing is hearing damage. Many people brush this damage off because they experience what's called temporary threshold shift.
We have little tiny hair cells inside of our inner ear, and when we go to a loud concert, they get kind of they get exercised and they get worked out.
That's Joe Hintz, an audiology extern at the University of Minnesota Medical Center, who's also worked as a sound engineer at First Avenue.
It just takes time for them to recover, and that's what that temporary threshold shift is.
That recovery period usually lasts from a few hours to a couple days, but the longer you expose those hair cells to loud noise, and the louder that noise is, the more they lose their ability to recover. Do this enough, and that ringing in your ears becomes permanent, in a condition called tinnitus. Tinnitus is pretty easy to define experientially.
If they're hearing a sound and that sound is not present in their environment, that's tinnitus.
By the way, it doesn't matter if you say tinnitus or tinnitus. Hinn says they're both correct. Defining tinnitus physically, however, is a bit harder for audiologists.
What we think tinnitus is, it's your brain wants to receive sound, it's not receiving sound, so it's amplifying itself. It's kind of turning up its own volume, and in turn, that brain is becoming active, and that activity within the brain is the tinnitus that we perceive. So what we're perceiving as tinnitus is actually just an excess of brain activity as a result of the brain not being stimulated from sound in our environment.
In other words, when our ears' hair cells become stressed to the point that they can't pick up certain frequencies of sound, our brain fills in those gaps for itself. At least, that's what scientists best guess about what tinnitus is. Though it's most often a symptom of hearing loss or damage, it can also be caused by certain pharmaceuticals. Sometimes it just randomly appears for seemingly no reason, which is called idiopathic tinnitus. It's hard to treat because it's not a standard issue condition.
Everyone experiences tinnitus differently, so some people have tinnitus in one ear, some people have tinnitus in both ears. Sometimes the tinnitus is high pitch, low pitch.
By the way, I suffer from tinnitus, and this is what mine sounds like. Sometimes tinnitus is a whine or a roar.
Sometimes it's pulsatile, so you might hear something that's rhythmic with the tinnitus, so it's like maybe in sync with your heartbeat, so you hear a sound every time your heart beats.
According to Fairview, between 10 to 15% of Americans report experiencing tinnitus, with 3% suffering enough to require medical aid. 50 million Americans will experience tinnitus at some point in their lives. Oh, and the thing about tinnitus? It's permanent. I'm here to tell you that your brain learns to just tune it out. I rarely notice it nowadays, but I also have very low-level tinnitus. For many, it's debilitating and impossible to ignore, and there is no cure, or really even effective treatment. So given the risk of doing real, permanent damage to your hearing, why do so many people subject themselves to the dangerous levels of loud concerts?
Concerts are weird. A lot of times people want it to hurt you a little bit, almost.
Ricardo Romero is a student AV tech with the U of M Sports Facilities and a freelance engineer. He says that the danger of that hearing damage can actually be alluring.
That's what's cool. You're being loud, you're being aggressive, you're being noisy. And that's what people relate to being fun and going to a concert. It's your ears are ringing afterwards.
Ricardo has worked gigs from sporting events to weddings to corporate dinners, and he says that in his experience, only music concerts regularly push the limits of harmful sound levels.
It's unique to concerts, I think, more so in terms of purposely trying to make it loud. Purposely trying to go, we want it really loud, you know, we want it to hurt a little bit. Sometimes the bands want that. They want that because it makes them seem bigger and makes them seem more aggressive. And that's their deal, but it does hit a certain limit, I think, of silliness.
These go to 11.
Where it's, you can't hear anything other than just noise coming at you.
Bands and their audiences may think pushing the limits of their hearing is fun and edgy, but both Romero and Hintz say that stems from an ignorance of what they're actually doing to their ears. Many people think that since the ringing goes away in a day or so, they're not actually doing damage. But Hintz says that tinnitus often creeps up over time.
It may be 5 years, it may be 15 years, it may be 30 years before we can measure a hearing loss as a result of that noise exposure. So it's not always immediate.
The fact that tinnitus isn't always immediate is actually a reason to start protecting against it now. Your ears may not already ring, but by the time they do, it will be too late.
I think that's the biggest thing. Hearing loss from noise is preventable, and that's really difficult because when you do see that hearing loss, there's nothing we can do when we see it, but we know the whole time it was preventable had they worn hearing protection.
In fact, it's easier now than ever to protect your ears. Just last year, the Minneapolis City Council passed an ordinance requiring all concert venues to provide free earplugs manufactured by 3M to all of its customers and employees. Still, many if not most people at concerts still won't wear earplugs. Many find them uncomfortable or that they make the music too boomy and bassy. Others just think they're uncool. There are other options for hearing protection that sound better and are more comfortable, including earmuffs and custom-fitted musicians' earplugs, which preserve music quality but are pretty expensive. Hinz says that there's not really a best choice among these options.
I think the best hearing protection is whatever hearing protection people are going to wear.
So when you go to your next concert, just grab a couple of the free earplugs in the big tub. You may feel like a dork, but it's way better to have some foam in your ears for a couple hours than grating noise in them for the rest of your life. From Minneapolis, this is David Lean for Real College Podcast.
Thank you, Minneapolis! St. Paul, Minnesota!
This is Olivia Iverson, and word on the street has it that if you're on your worst behavior, First Ave is the place to be this upcoming Thursday, the 11th, for Drake Night. Starting at 10 p.m., DJ Bach and DJ Greenery will mix up some of the Grammy nominees' greatest tracks. Likely to include Hold On, We're Going Home, off of his 2013 album, Nothing Was the Same.
I got my eyes on you. You're everything that I see. I want your high love and emotion endlessly. I can't get over you. You left your mark on me. I want your high love and emotion endlessly. Cause you're a good girl and you know it. So different around me. Cause you're a good girl and you know it. I know exactly who you could be. Just hold on, I'm going home. Just hold on, I'm going home. It's hard to do these things alone. Just hold on.
Are you in the mood to dance to some throwback hits from the late 90s and early 2000s? Well, First Ave is having their Forever Young Love semi-formal, Friday night at 9 p.m. Celebrating the best love songs from the TRL era, you'll hear music from NSYNC, Savage Garden, Mariah Carey, Shania Twain, Brandy, No Doubt, Foo Fighters, Kelly Clarkson, The Spice Girls, and more. Get ready to dance night away to throwback songs like my favorite, the Backstreet Boys, I Want It That Way. Yeah.
You are my fire, the one desire. Believe when I say I want it that way. But we are two worlds apart, can't reach to your heart. When you say that I want it that way, tell me why
ain't nothing but a heartache.
Tell me why
ain't nothing but a mistake. Tell me why
I never wanna hear you say
I want it that way.
Then on Sunday night, a.k.a. Valentine's Day, for all you lovebirds out there, Radio K hosts Diane Coffey with Jack and the Cokes. Based out of California, Diane started his musical career after being the voice actor behind Disney's Kim Possible. Starting at 7 p.m., you'll hear songs from Jack and the Cokes' album, Whiskey Kids, while later, Coffey will feature a few of his combinations of his song more defined as a 60s folk pop and doo-wop. But if you haven't heard his music before, here's a little preview. Lastly, the Triple Rock will be hosting William Within Sunday evening starting at 8 p.m. With a few of their members being some Radio K alumni, it's sure to be a great show. Sunday night will feature a few songs like this one.
Hello and welcome to the second half of the Real College Podcast. My name is Matthew Curtis, and earlier we discussed the dangers of hearing damage induced by playing loud music or going to concerts, and what you can do to avoid it. Now, it isn't all doom and gloom here. In fact, volunteer Iris Page attended a show at the prestigious and beloved First Avenue and spoke to fans about their passion for live music.
It's 9 p.m. in the First Ave main room. People are moving to the bar or bathroom between the sets, and I keep running into all of them as I'm balancing two bags, a field recorder, beer, microphone, and a set of fat headphones that keep sliding down my ears. But before long, I meet Harry.
My name is Harry.
Harry's a pretty friendly and talkative guy. He makes fun of my bulky equipment and tells me that I belong on an episode of The X-Files. And then he gets to start talking about his first First Avenue show.
There was a lot of cocaine. There was a lot of crowds. There was a lot of inebriation on stage, and it was just a real good time.
How many concerts at First Ave have you been to?
Just this year or ever? Hundreds.
The guy is pretty comfortable here in the main room. I noticed that he kept getting distracted talking to other people or staff walking by. But I guess if you've spent as much time here as Harry has, First Avenue's got to feel like a second home. But now it's 9:25, and it's time to start looking for Pete. He's one of the guys who works in the barricade. And right as I'm preparing to be put up with some giant, no-funny-business guy, I was met by a smiling Pete. He shows me right inside the barricade.
So this is your office?
This is my office.
How's your hearing?
My hearing is awesome because I've always wore earplugs.
Well, I forgot to do that. Now, the thing that I recognized almost immediately as I was talking with Pete was that working for First Ave wasn't just his job, it was also a major part of his lifetime. Straight out of high school, Pete fell upon a stroke of luck and got to work for the Prince Controversy Tour in 1981. Following that, he was able to work for the Purple Rain Tour. And then in 1986, he started to tour with the band Maserati.
And then post-tour, I moved to Minneapolis, and once I stepped foot in First Avenue, it was pretty much a done deal. I felt like I was home.
Now, here's where the audio from my interview during the concert has to end. Neither my field recorder or myself could pick up on Pete's words because of the show, so I had to snag him afterwards for a second run at the interview. So let's try this again. This is Pete.
Well, my position is in the barricade. I am, I guess, the last line of defense between the audience and the artist.
Working in the barricade has put Pete right in the thick of some insane behavior, both on and off stage.
Our ex-mayor, R.T. Ryback, as we all know, most many people in the Twin Cities know, he did his famous stage dive. And as he was being passed, or as the audience was carrying him around, I was following on the perimeter of it. I could tell he was like, oh my God, who's going to catch me? How am I going to get off top of this audience without landing on the floor? And when he looked over his shoulder and he saw me and he saw my staff shirt, and he just had the greatest look of relief because he just somehow knew, okay, this guy's got me.
When I ask Pete to tell me about specific shows he's been blown away by, he just laughs and says that he can't remember many shows because he has literally seen thousands.
I started at First Avenue in 1988.
All right.
So I have 17 years in the club. I'm on my second tour of duty. My first tour was 10 years, from 88 to 98, and then I came back in 2008, and that was 7 years ago, so I'm on my second year. 3 more years to go, I'll get my 20-year jacket.
Pete took some time off from First Ave and moved to California. He spent about a decade away from Minnesota, where he worked as a production assistant for major films like Bruce Almighty and National Treasure. However, he eventually decided to move back to be with his daughters. He says, of all the places to return to, he was very glad that it was Minneapolis.
So we're definitely a family environment. We stick to our own in the sense that we know who's coming in the door, and we make them feel right at home when they get here.
So there you have it. The ritual of the night at First Ave means a community, and even a second home, whether you're a longtime fan like Harry or a longtime employee like Pete.
Because I love everyone that comes here. I love our customers. I love the fans of First Avenue and the fans of the bands, and I just want people to have a good experience when they come here. So I do my best to promote that.
I'm Iris Page.
And that concludes this week's Real College Podcast. Thank you to David Lean, Iris Page, Olivia Iverson, Jackie Renzetti, and Max Fuller for contributing to this week's show. Our producers are Max Fuller, Patrick Sharkey, Jackie Renzetti, and David Lean. You can find us on RadioK.org, iTunes, and on Sundays at 6 p.m. on Radio K. To play us out is our weekly release spotlight, Columbus, Ohio four-piece All Dogs and their debut album Kicking Every Day. To read a full review of the album and download a free track, head on to RadioK.org. The song is called Skin, and it's right here on Radio K's Real College Podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.